Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, founder and CEO, Paul David. And I'm joined today by John Fontaine, who is the co-founder of Sesame. We're going to talk today about building a direct pay healthcare marketplace. Good to have you on the show, John.
Good to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Paul.
Yeah. Did I get your name right? Let me make sure, first thing.
You did. Yeah.
Nice. Good. So we're excited to have John on the show for a couple of reasons. One, to talk about Sesame, which is a really impressive healthcare marketplace that's making quality medical care affordable and accessible for everyone. Obviously, a big issue in the States. It's been, you know, hotly debated and talked about over the past few years, and it's good to see some tech innovation in the space. John brings a unique background to healthcare from working as a producer and songwriter at Interscope Records. We're going to talk about that, John. So that might be one to click on. Long ago, to spending nearly 7 years at Goldman Sachs and even founding a record label in Tokyo before co-founding Sesame in 2018. You've got one of those backgrounds. I love the founders who have like the winding road to being a founder. So we're going to dig into that. By way of introduction, Sesame has transformed how Americans access healthcare by creating a direct pay marketplace where patients can book appointments with doctors and specialists at transparent, affordable prices, often 60% less than traditional healthcare costs. The company has helped over 1 million patients and saved them more than 50 million to date. With major partnerships, including an exclusive deal with Costco for $29 virtual visits and backing from investors like Google Ventures and Virgin Group, Sesame is reshaping the healthcare landscape. Welcome to the pod, John.
Thank you so much. Where should we get started? Should we just go right into music or?
Well, we'll dig in. And like, as fate would have it, I literally just got off a call with my health insurance here in the UK. And boy, okay. was it a nightmare. Let me just tell you. So like, but the call left me wishing, like, how can I have a more direct, you know, access to the things that I need? And like, I'll just pay for it. But it's me sending them a form and claims and like begging them to pay for things. And it's just like, you know, so I don't know how we did that, but the universe aligned for that one. So.
Yeah. So maybe I can just start with telling you and the listeners just broadly, you know, who and what Sesame is.
Yeah.
And then happy to riff from there.
Yeah, let's do it.
But I think just broadly, Sesame is a platform that allows consumers or patients to access medical services, so doctor's appointments, for fixed and upfront cash prices, no insurance necessary. And so today, customers or patients go to Sesame to search and book for all kinds of medical services, ranging anywhere from a simple primary care appointment to a dental procedure, all the way to more complex procedures like an MRI, colonoscopy, an echocardiogram, and any and everything in between. Every single medical service has a cash price associated with it, and that is the ultimate price that customers pay. And so they see the price, they add their credit card information, they book, and that's it. No insurance necessary, no surprise bills afterwards. What I'm describing, probably if you remove the doctor or the medical service part from this, sounds very similar to how you, a consumer, buy everything online today. You go to a site, you search for it, you see a price, you add a credit card, you buy, that's it. And I think that was our overall goal. It's to create a platform that allowed you, the shopper, the consumer, the patient, to see a doctor, to book a medical appointment as easy as it is to book or buy anything else online. And so that ultimately is the goal of Sesame. I'm sure in this podcast we'll get into how that magic actually occurs behind the scenes, but that is our North Star, to create an experience that allows customers to book medical appointments as easy as it is to buy anything else online.
That's great. And would love to, so you've told us about the Sesame at a high level. Would love to just kind of, you know, paint the picture. You know, we know that a lot of our listeners are you know, frustrated with high healthcare costs and, as I experience, complex insurance systems. Well, let me just paint that picture of how the healthcare marketplace landscape has evolved. And you've kind of explained where Sesame fits in, but just like, what's going on out there that you know, created the need for a solution like Sesame?
Yep. So I think the most important fact is that deductibles continue to increase. It's actually, they're called, you know, some people refer to them as one chart businesses. When you look at the cost of deductibles in America, it's just an up and to the right graph over the last 20 or 30 years. And so what that means is, and a one chart business is, you just look at that and you say, oh, there's a business need here. So what that means is many, if not most Americans, number one, have a very high deductible. Number two, don't actually ever reach their deductible in any given year. And so we speak to, on the one side, obviously the uninsured American today who is paying out of pocket anyway. These are customers that are transacting in cash prices at the physician's office. We've provided them with a easier, more seamless transaction experience on the internet. But we're also speaking to folks who might be insured, who have high deductible healthcare plans, who might not hit that in any given year, or who are using Sesame for the convenience factor, who are using Sesame for the ease and the simplicity. I think overall, what was really interesting about Sesame is our customer has evolved from day zero to, we're 7.5 years into building this company. It's really evolved. And today, we always say there's a need. Everybody has some need for Sesame. Again, if all the way from the uninsured cash-paying customer to the high-deductible customer who might not hit his or her deductible in any given year, to the customer who is a price comparison shopper who's just going to a variety of sites to compare, to the convenience shopper. There is a need for many, if not all, customers that Sesame serves. And I think that's kind of the unlock for us, is our pie suddenly grew from that, just the uninsured customer bucket to essentially every American.
Makes sense. I would love to kind of dig into, this issue of transparency in healthcare pricing and how that can, have the potential of changing the game. And also this like broader picture of like the rise of cash pay healthcare and how that potentially empowers consumers.
So I think this is a trend we've been seeing in other industries as well. Customers just want control of their own destiny. I think the easiest analogy to paint is cord cutting, right? You started from having, paying your Time Warners or your Verizon of the world for one bundle to, quote, cutting the cord, which was the buzzword, I guess, 5 or 10 years ago. And so in general, I think customers want control of their own finances. Healthcare is needlessly complex and it makes it very difficult. But we've seen a lot of companies start and emerge over the last couple of years, I think really post-pandemic, that allow customers to book medical services for fixed and upfront cash prices. And so obviously we're tackling this on a horizontal level. By that, I mean we cover all medical services, as I said, anything ranging from primary care appointment all the way to radiology or colonoscopy. But I think there's a lot of fun and interesting companies that are tackling the same problem at a verticalized level. So you have companies that offer cash prices for weight loss, companies that offer cash prices for hair loss, companies that offer cash prices for erectile dysfunction, for mental health sessions, et cetera, for longevity. And so I think it's been a trend over the last couple of years. And I think going into the next couple of years, we'll see more and more companies emerge that allow customers to actually see, prices for the medical services that we're purchasing.
And we'd love to dig into a bit more about, kind of your product specifically. So, Sesame calls itself the superstore for great doctors. I think that would appeal to a lot of folks who kind of, want to shop a bit, shop around a bit and sort of compare. Can you walk us through how the platform actually works and what makes it different from, traditional, bookings that you would have in healthcare when you sort of book to see a GP or a doctor?
Yep. So I think, as I mentioned, underlying everything is the fact that we don't accept insurance. Everything is upfront, fixed cash prices. And so the moment you purchase a service, that's it. There's no surprise bills, which was my biggest gripe in general. And sorry, I should have started with, I have no idea how healthcare works. I'm 7.5 years into building this. I had no idea how it works. I still have no idea how it works. That's how complex it is. And I've spent, blood, sweat, and tears over the last 7 years trying to fix this. And I still don't know half of how the industry works. And so broadly, the experience is such that a consumer or a customer comes to our website. They can search for a medical service in plain English terms, rather than, instead of complex ICD code, ICD-10 codes, complex medical or healthcare jargon, we make it very simple. They can type in skin rash or primary care or whatever their ailment might be. And then we'll service a list of physicians that offer or that can treat that service. Again, in all, regular English terms. Every single service has a cash price associated with it. And the customer can actually sort by his or her preference, whether that's the price of the service, whether that's the distance from their home, whether that's the mode of care delivery, whether it's virtual or in person, whether that's language spoken by physician, whatever it might be. They don't have to sort by, is this physician in network or out of network? I need to go get my insurance card. They're sorting by more natural things that customers are used to sorting by on other platforms. The moment they decide that they want to see, a physician based on whatever personalized criteria it is, They can book the appointment. You know, you can have a saved credit card on Sesame. It's really just like Amazon, and they can immediately see that doctor, or they'll get a time slot with that doctor, and they can book an appointment with that doctor. What's happening in the backside, the back end, really is it's a marketplace. We have a group of physicians who, you know, think your classic marketplace, Airbnb, Expedia, or Uber. It's a marketplace where physicians actually list their services for cash prices. So physicians, there's a portal that the regular customer won't see. It's the physician portal. Can add their availability. They can change their prices. They can offer a service for, just making the number up, you know, $50 at 3 p.m. And that same service might be $100 at 11 p.m. And that in itself, that yield management, is something that exists in many other industries. Think of hotels, airlines. It's the most common phenomena that we know when we use marketplaces. That doesn't exist in healthcare today. And why is that? It's because the 11 p.m. reimbursement cost is the exact same as the 2 p.m. reimbursement cost. So there's no incentive for the physician to actually stay open and offer services. And in Sesame Land, there might be, right? They might have a customer. I have three kids who has a sick child at 11 p.m. And there's a price that I'm willing to pay to see a physician immediately, virtually. That actually happened to me while I was traveling to California the other day. And so, as I said, on the other side of this equation are the physicians who use Sesame to set up their business, to offer their services for cash prices, and they compete against each other. And when they compete against each other, naturally, the first lever that they go to or they went to was prices. Right? Because if I'm Jane Doe, you know, Dr. Jane Doe, and I want to get a couple more bookings from customers per day, what do I change to get more bookings? I change my prices. That's the same in retail. That's the same in travel. And so over the course of a couple of years, when that happens, and today we have thousands of physicians nationwide, when that happens on a nationwide basis, effectively what happens is that we lower the cost of many services. And I think importantly, prior to Sesame, there was no healthcare blue book. There was no MSRP for a 15-minute primary care appointment or a 30-minute mental health session. There was no MSRP for that cash price. Whereas you broadly know how much a pair of headphones costs, or you broadly know how much the new Apple iPhone is going to cost. There was no clearing price for these medical services, and so on day one, Sesame really set that price. As you can imagine, over time, once physicians started to compete against each other on the prices, we started to lower that price. And so the price that we have today is 60-70% lower than the price that we started showing on day zero. We like to say we're the only company in America that's actually lowered the price of healthcare. And so happy to get into it more, but that's broadly how it works. Our marketplace works very similar to how other marketplaces work in other industries. On the one side, we have demand, or our customers, patients looking for medical services. On the other side, we have supply. Physicians, doctors who are looking to, to grow their business. And we're simply pairing those two together. I'm dumbing it down, but that is in essence what a marketplace is. And it's worked so effectively on the internet over the past 20 years and everywhere except for healthcare.
Yeah, it's great. You kind of answered my follow-up question around like efficiency gains when you mentioned the yield management stuff and kind of physicians listing their prices in different places, different times. And that's really interesting. Have you seen any like sort of interesting results from that, like kind of introducing that yield management into the healthcare sector?
So a ton, right? I think a lot of what we do at Sesame, when we're speaking outwardly to investors or to potential employees or to friends, is to talk about the impact we've had on customers. But I don't think we speak enough about the impact we've had on physicians. And so if I may, number one, we give the physicians all the tools they need to actually launch their, call it e-commerce shop, or I like to use the analogy of we are Shopify for many physicians. And so many physicians don't today have an online presence. And so Sesame becomes their de facto web store. Just like many brick and mortar retailers may not have an online shop, and they use Shopify to sell their services online or their goods, we do that for physicians. And so we give them all the tools to manage their practices, whether that's, as I just mentioned, managing yield on some of their services, managing availability, managing patient notes, whatever it might be, we give them all the tools to manage their business. And, I'm proud to say that today we have many physicians who started on Sesame with $0 in earnings on Sesame, who've made over $1 million in the lifetime of using Sesame. That's a really cool feeling. And I think importantly, when I think about very big businesses, why, how do they become big? It's the Airbnb, or very big marketplaces, the Airbnbs of Ubers of the world. It's because they brought supply that didn't previously exist onto the marketplace. And so when I think about Airbnb, if I'm a host and I was never a host before and I decide to become one, that's suddenly supply that never existed on the marketplace, or that's now brought off the sidelines. If I'm, you know, if I have a car and I suddenly want to drive people around, I'm an Uber driver, that's supply that never existed, that was brought off from the sidelines. I think it's similar in Sesame, where a lot of physicians may not today offer cash prices for services. Many do, and we're simply offering them an easier way to do so. But if you don't, we can bring you off the sideline and we can actually allow you to offer services to customers on a cash basis.
Really interesting. And like, I like the idea of, and you focused on customers, but like, you know, there's an impact on the doctor side as well. So it's kind of, you know, serving dual purposes. And yeah, I hope you get a chance to talk more about that, because I think that's really interesting. I think it's
totally, absolutely.
Yeah. Would love to talk a bit more about your growth strategy, or just get into your growth strategy here. You know, you've built some impressive partnerships. You've got this exclusive deal with Costco offering these $29 virtual visits to working with major employees through Sesame at Work. Would love to just dig into, like, how's your growth strategy evolved since launching? You've got these partnerships, you know, you're expanding direct pay. You know, what are your plans for continued growth and market expansion?
So I'll walk you through the journey, which is on day zero. Number one, we had no idea what we were doing, which is underlying many things in my life, is I have no idea what I'm doing. But importantly, we had no idea what we were doing as it related to how and who to acquire. Specifically, we had a broad sense of who we would acquire, but it was really how we would acquire this patient was where we were stumbling. Because healthcare is a unique beast in that if you're in any other vertical, take travel for an instance, I know as an advertiser that if I show you enough ads that you are going to book travel 1.7 times a year. And you might book it on somebody else's platform, you might book it on mine, but I just need to keep on showing you ads. And the average American makes 1.7 trips per year, family vacations. And so I just know I need to continuously bombard you with ads, and at some point on different channels, and at some point you'll come to my platform, and then I'll optimize that channel and to find more customers that look like you or twinning. Healthcare is very different, as in I, you know, might have no interactions with the healthcare system for a decade, and then suddenly I might get sick, I might have a chronic condition, and suddenly I need care. Or I might sprain my ankle in the morning, or my throat might hurt, whatever it might be, I suddenly may have a need for healthcare. At which point, as you can probably relate to, I'm not going to shop for the next 6 months for the, you know, for which doctor to go see or for what platform to use. I'm going to make a decision in the next 5 seconds. I twisted my ankle. My throat hurts. Once I've decided, I might push it off for a week, but once I've decided, okay, I need to go see a doctor, you know, I have 5, 10 seconds as an advertiser to capture that customer. And so that's very difficult in healthcare. And so that was the initial struggle we were facing with, was how are we going to actually acquire that customer? Where are they searching? Are they calling a friend? Are they, you know, looking online? And so we didn't know, as many companies, you know, initially don't know what channel to go to capture. And so we kind of sprayed and prayed. We went through every single paid channel, whether that's, you know, paid search, paid social, display, billboards, to figure out where was that customer and how could we find them. Long story short, we discovered that most channels don't work because most channels were information-seeking channels. And again, if you think about your own healthcare journey, while you're deciding, should I go see the doctor or not, you're doing a lot of research. And so that really isn't helpful for Sesame. We wanted to be at the lowest, you know, level, highest intent customer, where they said, okay, I need to see a doctor. I want to pay, you know, I've decided I want to pay cash. What is that platform? And so we found that channel. Not revealing too much secret sauce. And so for the next, you know, 2-3 years, we just focused on acquiring that customer in that channel on a one-off basis.
Can you say what channel that is?
So it's paid search, where we had a really good arbitrage opportunity on keywords that customers were searching for. And we augmented that with a moat that we had on the organic/SEO side. But we got really good, and we are very good at acquiring that customer, because we're able to essentially arbitrage some of the words that others aren't able to bid on or acquire. And that is enabled by our marketplace. Not to get too into it, but because we're able to compete against such a broader variety of terms versus just on a verticalized basis, where we're able to find essentially an arbitrage opportunity to capture many of these patients. Now, that's great. It continues to be great. But it continues to be difficult because you're acquiring customers one at a time, hand-to-hand combat, which is a B2C marketplace in general. And the unit economics work for us. Everything works well, but it's exhausting. As in, and I'm not just mentioning, describing Sesame, but for many B2C marketplaces, acquiring customers on a one-off basis becomes very difficult and lengthy. You can predict out the LTVs if the unit economics work, amazing. But again, I think underlying that is this natural phenomena in healthcare where your repeat usage on Sesame may drastically change one year over the next. We broadly have a sense for what our customers' usage is. But as I mentioned, you suddenly may, get, hope you don't, but, have a lot of needs in the healthcare system one year, and one year you may not have any needs. And so it becomes trickier to acquire a customer with certainty, knowing in the repeat usage. And so naturally we thought, okay, what are other channels outside of just direct to consumer that we can go to continue our growth and continue acquiring customers? And I'm not saying anything earth shattering here, but what we realize is if we could go essentially B2B or what's known as B2B2C, it would be a much more efficient way to actually acquire customers. And also B2B2C has three constituents here: Sesame, the B2B customer, the partner, the corporate partner, and also their customers. It's a win-win-win situation for all, as well as for the doctors on the Sesame platform. So this was a true win-win-win-win situation where we win because we have big funnel of customers that now can use Sesame. We don't have to go out and acquire them one by one. The actual partner, corporate partner, wins because they have a great partner that can offer tremendous medical services at low prices to their customers. Obviously, the end customers win because they get suddenly surfaced this offering at a low price that they may not have known about. And our underlying physicians or our doctors also win because they get to treat patients, they get to build their business, etc. And so I think we, in 2023, we leaned into that channel. We took a long time to close the partnership, but we were fortunate enough to secure a large partnership with Costco that has been very good to us. I think we'll continue to explore opportunities in the so-called B2B2C space. But I think underlying everything is we'll never not be a B2C platform, right? Because what enabled us to strike the partnership with Costco, what enabled us to be attractive to other corporate partners or other employers, is that we have this vibrant marketplace that is happening with a ton of liquidity. By liquidity, I mean a ton of patients utilizing our services offered by thousands of physicians. That dynamic, vibrant marketplace, the consumer-facing marketplace, it's the same underlying architecture, but it's essentially what allows us to structure and secure these large corporate partnerships.
Yeah, I love two things that you said there. One, the find your channel. I think that's what we encourage our clients, and we try to do with our clients, is help them find that specific channel. And I think too many agencies, they ask, their customers or clients to boil the ocean and try all these different, tactics and strategies and stuff like that. And that's not strategy. Like strategy is saying no to a lot of channels that you test and don't work for you.
So I think, by the way, I think there's a time and place for that, because I think when you're starting out a business, every business is different. And so what works for Sesame might not work for your company. Your company might be in the exact same space and vertical, and maybe same offering as Sesame, but for whatever reason, you might have a different channel that resonates with customers. And so I think there's a time and place to spray and pray, to see what, just try every channel, leave no stone unturned. And then I think the key is, once you find the channel that works, the mistake that I think we initially made, but that we rectified and that I see a lot of people making, is try to replicate the success in that one channel that you've seen across all the channels, because you've set up the campaigns, because the architecture is already there. So it's easy to just say, great, let's try to replicate, these CPAs, these LTV to CAC profiles in these other channels. Whereas what we realized the right thing to do is to say, oh, forget these other channels. Let's just focus on this channel and let's try to optimize. And only after we think we've kind of saturated this and we've hit our floor on CPAs, we've hit our peaks on LTV to CACs in this channel, only then should we start looking at other channels. And so I think that's been a big learning lesson for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the B2B to C piece, I mean, we do that in the form of, getting on, expert benches with incubators and accelerators and being a preferred vendor for VCs. And so that we just build these pipeline partners and the clients then come to us, and we're not having to spend so much money on outbound and kind of new business. It's a no-brainer and a win-win-win, as you said.
Yeah. And so I'm also, you know, oversimplifying it where obviously anybody can say, oh, just, you know, you're B2C. Great. Just go B2B2C. The truth is it's a lot of work. And, you know, especially as a small company, a growing startup, it's a very big decision to decide you're going to go from a B2C platform to, you know, B2B or B2B2C, because suddenly now you have to support that, you know, underlying partner with the same, if not more, amounts of handholding and effort than you did the consumer side. And so, and as a small company, when you have a million priorities and everything is the top priority, it becomes very, very difficult, right? And so naturally, when, you know, a partner calls us at, you know, midnight, we have to serve that partner because these partners are, you know, are entrusting us with their brand that they've, you know, fostered and developed over tens of years, and so, you know, decades. And so suddenly, you know, we had this one priority set, and that could completely change when we get, you know, a late night call, or it doesn't even have to be late night, but when we get a call from a partner, because we have to service that partner in the same way that we're making Sesame the best experience possible for our patients and for our doctors. We now have a third customer to serve, which is our, you know, which are our partners. And so we have to make it the best experience for them. And so that you know, for any startup, that suddenly becomes a wow. Now we have all, you know, we have this huge set of things to do, and now we have another list of things to do. And so it's not as easy as, oh, let's just flip on the B2B2C switch. There's obviously a lot of things that you have to figure out as you're going.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, our business is built on partnerships. And, you know, when I look back at the, you know, past couple of years, 5 years of running the agency, like, it's those anchor sort of retainer clients, those partners who just stuck with us and were loyal that have made the difference and have given us the foundation from which to grow. I just went to a Kendrick Lamar concert with our longest client, and he took me. Nice. So like, I'm like, that. I must be doing something right with these partnerships. Normally it should be the other way around. The agency owner is wine and dining the client.
Nice.
But I'd love for you to speak to that. Like, there's a lot of trust and a lot of like relationship building that goes into that. So take your partnership with Costco. Like, how did you get them to trust and like offer you some of their brand equity? Like, that's a big deal for a brand like Costco to be like, we trust you to deliver this to our, you know, customers, and that you're not going to mess this up and damage their reputation with their customers. Like, how do you build that? What do those steps look like?
If I had the exact formula, I would want to use that to all our partners. I think, yeah, the truth is, I don't have the exact formula, but what I know is you can go into, as we did with the Costco meeting, you can go into a partnership pitch or a BD, you know, pitch or a sales pitch with, you know, obviously hard numbers. You know, here's our customer satisfaction, here's our NPS, here are our conversion, all those numbers. And I think that's baseline. I think it's from there is the, as I said, if I knew the secret formula, I would, first of all, I wouldn't be sharing with you. I'm kidding. You know, I would want to use that over and over again. I don't have the exact formula, but what I do know is that it takes a lot of time, right? You can't, just like it took a lot of time for us, to convince our customers that they should use Sesame, they should trust us with their health. You know, just like it might take you a lot of time to convince your partner that you should get married. It takes a long time to convince a business partner to do business with you. And so it isn't a great, let's jump on a Zoom. I'll pitch you for 30 minutes and here's the agreement. I think a lot of partnerships structured are like that, but I think for the much larger ones, it's a handholding, right? So you have to elicit trust from both parties.
Yeah.
We took a lot of trips out to Issaquah where they're headquartered. This was not just a, this happened overnight. It was a, you know, 18 to 24 month courting process on our part. And I think, you know, we have a couple of other partnerships in the pipeline where it's not just an overnight, hey, here's an MSA we'd love for you to sign, and then we're off to the races. As I said, I think we do have a lot of those partnerships as well, and those are great. But some of the bigger ones are, it takes time, right? As I said, all the numbers that we can show are baseline. And from there, it's, you know, getting to know us, getting to know our management team, for their team to see how much effort and pride we put in making sure that we have, you know, proper clinical standards, proper, obviously, just, you know, compliance and operational standards. We have all the certifications in place, that the founders and the management team are completely, you know, preoccupied with solving needs for our patients and providers, because they see then, okay, how are they going to react when, you know, a Costco member has an issue, or if I'm a different partner, right? When one of my employees has an issue, how will this team actually react to that need? I think they get to see that over a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, and just to speak to that, I mean, I love that you're wearing your human t-shirt, and we're called Literal Humans for a reason, because I think, and that's why we named ourselves that, because, you know, as much as you're selling a product or a service or a widget, and I'm glad that you mentioned the leadership team, like ultimately we realized that, you know, especially in a service-based business like ours, like they're buying the way we think, the way we treat them, the way we're going to treat their, you know, their customers or their partners and vendors and stuff like that. And that is most of it. You know what I mean? They're like how we make them feel, yep. How we work with them.
Yep.
And we've actually, you know, transformed our sales process to be just a series of conversations that build this kind of doctor-patient relationship, you know, in that bedside manner over time. And then you get to the proposal, then you get to the contract and stuff like that. But by that time, it's a foregone conclusion because you've gelled the relationship so much. So
yep.
Couldn't agree more with, like, you know, that process of building those partnerships.
Yeah. I have a partner that I'm working with now. I won't mention the name yet because it's not public, but we haven't talked business. He obviously knows the SESME offering. You know, we'd love to be partners with them. We haven't talked. We talked business our first meeting for the last 6 months. And now we just talk. He's into sneakers. I'm into sneakers. So we talk sneakers. He's shipped me a pair of sneakers. I've shipped him a pair of sneakers. His kids are coming over this weekend to go in the pool with mine. And it's great. And so we have this relationship. I get to see how he, you know, how he is with his business. He gets to see how we are with ours. And I think, you know, when the time is right, we'll get to the business. But I think a lot of this is you're essentially marrying a partner for it's a long-term commitment. And so you do want to see, you know, all facets of their life. And I'm not saying every single partnership has that same cadence or needs to be like that. But I am saying that any partner that sends me a pair of sneakers gets pushed to the top priority of my queue.
Yeah. Okay. Just making a note right now. This is how you want to get in John's good graces. Send him some kicks. Cool. Awesome. Well, I mean, that's a great segue into talking to a little bit more personally about your career trajectory. I think one of the blessings of what I get to do here is just to learn about these amazing founder journeys. So I think we touched upon it briefly in the introduction, but your path to healthcare is quite unconventional. And you say you still don't fully understand healthcare. I think that's more about healthcare than about you. You've touched music production at Interscope. You've worked at Goldman Sachs before co-founding Sesame. What drove you to take us on that winding road? What drove you into tackling healthcare accessibility and affordability?
So I never wanted to start a healthcare company. I never wanted to be in healthcare. And yet I am doing everything that I ever want to do now. And so just quickly speaking to my story. Yeah, I as I said, I never wanted to touch healthcare. I was in the music industry for a while. I was a songwriter and music producer. I signed my first deal with Interscope when I was in college. I later got dropped. That's for another day, which was dejecting to me. And I went into a big depression. And so I thought, what is the thing that I hate the most? And that's finance. And so I decided, let me do that as a masochist because I'm so depressed because I just got dropped from my record label. And then so I went into finance. I did banking at Goldman Sachs for a while. And then I got back into, and then I realized, oh, I'm really bad at this. I think I hate it for a reason because I'm really, really bad at this. And then I went back, so I decided to go back into music, started a record label in Japan, had a lot of success there. But then I realized that while I love music and the art and craft of it, I don't necessarily love the industry. And so I left. I joined a travel company to do something completely different, which was a blast. I lived in London, in Europe for almost 5 years and got to see the world. And then I got the itch. After I sold my record label, as many founders can probably appreciate, I was just so beaten down and exhausted. I vowed to never start a business again. After I left and I was in the travel industry for a couple of years, I suddenly got the itch to start another company. And so I was searching for a while, you know, what that company would do and what space it would be in. And throughout that journey, as I was figuring out what I want to build and what company I want to start, I would ping my good friend, Mike. He was my smartest friend from college. We were hallmates in college, to ask him, you know, do you think this is a good business idea? If I want to start this business, what do you think about this? Mike's a co-founder at Sesame. And he would always push back. By the way, Mike calls me his best friend, and I just need to put this on record. He's like my seventh good friend. Anyway, he would always push back and say, I don't like that. You know, here are the holes in that business. And he would always say, I have this idea for this healthcare marketplace that I want to do. And I said, no, I don't want to do healthcare. Healthcare is gross. I know nothing about it. And that all changed. And side note, I also didn't know how complex healthcare was because I was, and hopefully am, a relatively healthy individual. I had very infrequent interactions with the healthcare system. And so that all changed in 2018 when my wife was pregnant with our first, and she had a couple of pregnancy complications. And it was the first time that I had to actually figure out and navigate the healthcare system in America. And I think that's the first time that I realized absolutely how complex and, dare I say, broken it was. I couldn't figure out how I was going to get this procedure. I couldn't figure out, first of all, what was going on. We were getting conflicting views from the physicians that we would go see. I would walk into a bunch of these checkup appointments, and I would have no idea how much these appointments would cost. And then I would walk away, and 3 months later, I would get a bill in the mail for $13,000. I have one bill for $21,000. And that was such a jarring experience to me. And again, it's a very personal one because this involved, at the time, my unborn first child. Everything is fine now, and she's healthy, is the TLDR. But it was such a jarring experience. And I couldn't think of another experience where, I would buy something without knowing the price, and then just hope that I wouldn't get a bill in the mail 3 months later. And so I picked up the phone, and I called Mike, and I said, "Hey, that healthcare idea you're talking about, I'm interested. Like, can you tell me more about this?" And then he came over and grabbed a beer, and we were just casually talking about it. And I think in the movie that will be created, 24 hours later, we're in a WeWork and we're building this thing. That wasn't the case. It took a lot of hemming and hawing and thinking, I don't really know if I'm going to do this. Mike brought in his good friend David, who's another co-founder of the company, to help us with this. But I think ultimately, after saying a lot of, there's reasons that we shouldn't do this, ultimately the three of us decided, I think the time to do it is now, right? We want to build this company. There's a clear need for it. We were very passionate about this space. David, as many listeners might know, has been on YouTube and online talking about his own experiences with the healthcare system. And so finally, we decided to rent a two-person office, two-person WeWork office. We were a three-person company. And so one of us had to work in the common space while the other two were in the office. Finally, in 2018, we decided, let's just start this and see where it goes. And so that was, my reason to want to do this was because of that terrible, terrible experience that I had with, my wife's pregnancy, going on online forums, reading about others that had, similar diagnoses, that had similar experiences. I never wanted, somebody to have that kind of experience. And, to be honest, the Sesame that we started on day zero has obviously morphed and it's changed into something else today. But I think underlying everything that's changed is still this belief that there is a better way, a more efficient way for patients to access care. And we want to create that. And so, as I said, over time, our product offerings have changed slightly. The customers that use us change slightly. But the underlying thesis and principle belief in needing a Sesame to exist hasn't changed.
Yeah, I love that. And it's always, as I said, incredible for me to hear how these products and innovations have come through these moments when, these stories, the incredible empathy that I think founders generate, whether it's something that's happened to them or something they've seen happen to other people. And then there's this explosion of like innovation and passion, which is such a pleasure. It's like my favorite thing about working in this sector. So especially in health tech too. And it's so,
absolutely,
it's life or death, so.
Yep. I think a lot of, as I share that story with other founders and other friends, I think what I realize is a lot of, number one, everybody has a story about the healthcare system, whether it's to you or a loved one or a friend of, oh, let me tell you about this. And so that's why I know that there should be a Sesame, because everybody I speak to, as I said, has some story about how, something that was wrong in healthcare. Oh, let me tell you about this bill. Oh, let me tell you about this time that I was hospitalized, whatever it might be. And I think further, a lot of founders in the health tech or healthcare space started their company. Starting a company itself is a terrible idea, all things considered, but because there's some traumatic event that happened in their life that happened to a loved one or to a friend, that typically involves the health of that loved one. And they had a personal reason to build this. And I think that's what fueled a lot of founders. And I think that's what fuels me as well.
Absolutely. We'd love to jump to our lightning round questions and going to hold you to it. First thing that comes to mind there, just keep it short, keep it snappy. And the idea is just for our audience to get to know you a little bit better. So first question, I know you're busy with Sesame, but based on what you've learned and all, if you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
So this is not a tech startup, but I think like education has been fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. I have three kids. Like obviously AI is changing everything. And so the way that I learn things in life is just so different from the way that my, kids today are learning, and that kids, my kids are young, but that they'll learn in the next 10 years. And so I don't know what the business is, but I just think education is going to and has to change over the next you know, 10, 20 years. The tools that exist now for kids, none of this stuff existed when we were children, when we were in elementary, middle school, or high school. And yet, when I look at some of the curriculum for my kids, a lot of it is still the same, right? And so I think there has to be, at the highest level, that would be, you know, a new type of school. I know a couple of people actually doing and building this, but I don't think it needs to be that complex. I think there can be, you know, other tools that we can, you know, I can build to offer teachers to enhance the teaching experience, to have new curriculum, et cetera. But I just think education as a whole is, you know, once we sell Sesame or once it goes public, it's the next thing that I'd like to tackle, because I think it's, you know, going to vastly, vastly change over the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah, loads of ideas for that. Used to be an educator, got out of it. You know, one of my favorite jobs was being working in the New York City Department of Education, designing new high schools. So when you're ready, let's talk, because I think
perfect.
I'd love to get back into it. Yeah, ready to go, John.
Love it. I'll interview you as the host for when you start it, maybe.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be amazing. Flip side of that, well, I guess getting into the tech side of things, what tech invention makes you the most excited right now?
So I, like many people, am just mesmerized and blown away by some of the AI tools that exist now. I, again, like many others, I spend my, you know, 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. hours just vibe coding, you know, who knows what, just silly things, but just the tools that I'm able to use right now and come up with, you know, different apps or just silly things. Coming back to education, just the fact that I can actually use these tools to, you know, play games with my kids is incredible. And so the other day, for example, I made an entire story using my child's classmates' names about, and I created an entire book in ChatGPT about that. And then I then put that script back in, and then I came up with the pictures for that. And then I printed that. And then within, you know, 2 hours, I had a full story illustrated about a dragon who stole my kids' graduation caps and they couldn't graduate. So they had to have a team activity to capture the dragon, and they do capture him. And the punchline, they ask, why did you steal our caps? It's because he never graduated. And so he was sad. And so they said, you should graduate with us. And this was this amazing story that I was able to read to the entire school.
So cool.
They thought I was a best-selling author. I spent 90 minutes vibe coding this from, you know, 10 a.m. to or whatever, 10 p.m. to, you know, 11:30. It's incredible what some of these AI tools can do. And so
Absolutely.
I'm tremendously fascinated by that. I also love, you know, it's kind of a healthcare thing, but, you know, some of these new longevity platforms, I'm using a couple of them, you know, Function Health, Superpower, they're incredibly fascinating. And so I think, you know, longevity is a big thing that a lot of people are tackling. I just think it's really, really fascinating some of the data that these companies can surface to the customer. And so I've been playing around with a bunch of those tools. I have a Whoop and an Aura and an Apple Watch. And so I'm really getting into kind of, you know, measuring data and looking at some of these longevity tools to figure out how I can, you know, be there for the longest amount of time possible for my kids.
Nice. You're the second person in the podcast to mention creating a children's book for their kids, which I think is really fascinating.
Okay.
It's something to
thread
to pull there. I'm going to hold you to the short, snappy answer thing. So we're going to have the hard
Perfect.
Stop
okay.
Soon.
Okay. Let's do it.
What's the tech innovation that makes you most concerned? Real quick.
AI. Still AI.
Okay. And one sentence, why?
We don't know. Like, even the developers of these platforms don't know, like, how to use some of the tools. And so as the new model comes out, even the developers are like, oh, what happens when you click this? What happens when you do this? That's scary when even the people building it don't really know how to use the thing that they've just built.
Definitely. Who's a literal human that you want to shout out who's been integral to your career?
My father. He's, and you know, my parents, my mother, who was, I think, where my entrepreneurial spirits comes from, but my father, who, just an interesting thing, retired a couple years ago after spending 30 years in his professional capacity. I thought he was going to retire, and I said, great, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go travel? You know, are you just going to take time off? And he said, no, I'm excited for my next journey. So I got to figure out what I'm going to do next at 60, which was so motivating to me, because there's an old saying of, you're never too late. When you always think you're too late, you're never too late. And so here was a 60-year-old man that was excited about, you know, starting his next thing at 60. And it made total sense to me. Like, yeah, you probably have, you know, 30 years left. And so that kind of reinforced that it's never too late. You can always do something new. You can always do the next thing. If this 60-year-old, you know, man can start his next thing, you as a, you know, 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, you can always start your next thing. You're never too late.
Impressive. Yeah. Shout out to Dad. And then lastly, what's an inspirational quote that stuck with you through your journey in tech?
So you'll hopefully appreciate this based on my background, and I'm going to butcher it, but it's the Steve Jobs quote of, it goes something like, you can never connect the dots looking backwards. You can only connect them. I'm sorry. You can never connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards.
Yeah.
It's kind of my story, right? There was no way for me to predict. There was no way for me to connect the dots looking forward that I would, be doing this in healthcare. But it's only after I look back and I can connect the dots backwards that I can see, this all makes sense. I know why, I got here. It was a meandering path, but the dots all connected. And so I butchered it. So I'm just going to say it again. You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards.
We can edit it up. All good. John, I really appreciate you joining us today. I think this conversation highlights, the fresh perspectives that are coming into health tech and the need for access and affordability. And, with all the bluster out there, all the politics, like you're doing it, you're making it more affordable, more accessible for folks. So thank you. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing. We're big fans here at LH. Where can listeners find out more about Sesame and the great work that you're doing?
So I would love if folks could go check us out online. We're at www.sesamecare.com. We're on every social platform. I think we're at Sesame Care. And then if you have any questions for me, or if you want to figure out more about my life journey, always feel free to follow me. I'm at John Fontaine, I think, on all social platforms. I'm very infrequently posting on those because I'm so heads down building this, but I always will check messages, and so happy to connect there as well.
Amazing. And for our listeners, if this episode made you feel positive about the future of health tech and healthcare, please leave us a review, give us a rating, ideally a 5-star one. Helps us bring more innovative founders like John onto the podcast, folks who are using technology to solve real world problems and maybe disprove the title of this podcast that maybe tech can save us. So thanks, John. Really appreciate your time. And thanks, everybody, for listening.